Osho Talk. Zen, The Path of Paradox, Volume 1, Number 1.
Zen says, like the empty sky, it has no boundaries, yet it is right in this place, ever profound and clear. When you seek to know it, you cannot see it. You cannot take hold of it, but you cannot lose it. In not being able to get it, you get it. When you are silent, it speaks. When you speak, it is silent. The great gate is wide open to bestow alms, and no crowd is blocking the way.
First few fundamentals. Zen is not a theology. It is a religion. And religion without a theology is a unique phenomenon. All other religions exist around the concept of God. They have theologies. They are God-centric, not man-centric. Man is not the end. God is the end. But not so for Zen. For Zen, man is the goal. Man is the end unto itself. God is not something above humanity. God is something hidden within humanity. Man is carrying God in himself as a potentiality. So there is no concept of God in Zen. If you want, you can say that it is not even a religion. Because how can there be a religion without the concept of God? Certainly, who have been brought up as Christians, Mohammedans, Hindus, Jews, cannot conceive what sort of religion Zen is. If there is no God, then it becomes atheism. It is not. It is theism to the very core, but without a God. This is the first fundamental to be understood. Let it sink deep in you, then things will become clear. Zen says that God is not extrinsic to existence. It is intrinsic. It is not there. It is here. In fact, there is no there for Zen. All is here. And God is not then. God is now. And there is no other time. No other space, no other time. This moment is all. In this moment, the whole existence converges. In this moment, all is available. If you cannot see it, that does not mean it is not available. It simply means you don't have the vision to see it. God has not to be searched. Only you have to open your eyes. God is already the case. Prayer is irrelevant in Zen. whom to pray. There is no God sitting there somewhere in the heavens and controlling life, existence. There is no controller. Life is moving in a harmony on its own accord. There is nobody outside it giving it commandments. When there is an outside authority, it creates a kind of a slavery. A Christian becomes a slave. The same happens to a Mohammedan. When God is there commanding, you can be at the most a servant or a slave. You lose all dignity. Not so with Zen. Zen gives you tremendous dignity. There is no authority anywhere. Freedom is utter and ultimate. Had Friedrich Nietzsche known anything about Zen, he may have turned a mystic rather than going mad. He had stumbled upon a great fact. He says, there is no God, God is dead, and man is free. But basically, he was brought up in the world of the Jews and the Christians, a very narrow world, very much confined in concepts. He has stumbled upon a great truth. There is no God. God is dead. And hence man is free. He has stumbled upon the dignity of freedom. But it was too much. For his mind it was too much. He went mad. He went berserk. Had he known anything like Zen, he would have turned into a mystic. There was no need to go mad. One can be religious without a God. In fact, how one can be religious with a God? That is the question Zen asks. A very disturbing question. How a man can be religious with a God? Because God will destroy our freedom. God will dominate you. And you can look into the Old Testament and God says, I am a very jealous God. And I cannot tolerate any other gods. And those who are not with me are against me. And I am a very violent and cruel God. And I will punish you. And you will be thrown into eternal hell fire. How man can be religious with such a God? How you can be free? And how you can bloom without freedom? There is no flowering. How can you come to your optimum manifestation when there is a God confining you, condemning you, forcing you this way and that, manipulating you? Zen says, with God, man will remain a slave. With God, man will remain a worshipper. With God, man will remain in fear. In fear, how can you bloom? You will shrink. You will become dry. You will start dying. Zen says, when there is no God, there is tremendous freedom. No authority in existence. Hence, there arises great responsibility. Look, if you are just dominated by somebody, you cannot feel responsible. Authority creates necessarily irresponsibility. Authority creates resistance. Authority creates in you reaction, rebellion. You would like to kill God. That's what Nietzsche means when he says God is dead. Not that God has committed a suicide. He has been murdered. He has to be murdered. With him, there is no possibility to be free. Only without him. But then he became so much afraid himself. To live without God needs great courage. To live without God needs great meditation. To live without God needs great awareness. That was not there. That's why I say he stumbled upon the fact. It was not a discovery. He was groping in the dark. For Zen, it is a discovery. It is established truth. There is no God. Man is responsible for himself and for the world he lives in. If there is suffering, you are responsible. There is nobody else to look for. You cannot throw your responsibility. If the world is ugly and is in pain, we are responsible. There is nobody else. If we are not growing, we cannot throw the responsibility on somebody else's shoulders. We have to take the responsibility. When there is no God, you are thrown back to yourself. Growth happens. You have to grow. You have to take hold of your life. You have to take reins in your own hands. Now you are the master. You have to be more alert and more aware. Because whatsoever is going to happen, you will be responsible. This gives great responsibility. One starts becoming more alert, more aware. One starts living in a totally different way. One becomes more watchful. One becomes a witness. And when there is no beyond, the beyond is within you. There is no beyond beyond you. In Christianity, the beyond is beyond. In Zen, the beyond is within. So the question is not to raise your eyes towards the sky and pray. That is meaningless. You are praying to an empty sky. The sky is far lower in consciousness than you. Somebody is praying to a tree. Many Hindus go and pray to a tree. Many Hindus go to the Ganges and pray to the river. Many pray to a stone statue. Many pray towards the sky. Or many pray towards a concept, an idea. The higher is praying towards the lower. Prayer is meaningless. Zen says only meditation. It is not that you have to kneel down before somebody. Drop this old habit of slavery. All that is needed is you have to become quiet and silent and go within words to find out your center. That very center is the center of existence too. When you have come to your innermost core, you have come to the innermost core of existence itself. That's what God is in Zen. But they don't call it God. It is good that they don't call it God. So the first thing to remember, Zen is not a theology. It is a religion. And that too, with a tremendous difference. It is not a religion like Islam. The most fundamentals in Islam are three: one God, one book, and one prophet. Zen has no God, no book, no prophet. The whole existence is God's prophecy. The whole existence is His message. And remember, God is not separate from this message either. This message itself is divine. There is no messenger. All that nonsense has been completely dropped by Zen. Because theology arises with one book. It needs a Bible. It needs a Holy Quran. It needs a book which pretends to be holy. It needs a book which tries to say that it is special. No other book is like this. This is a God sent, a gospel. Zen says, everything is divine. So how can something be special? All is special. Nothing is non-special. So nothing can be special. Each leaf of every tree and each people on every source is special, unique, holy. Not that the Quran is holy. Not that the Bible is holy. When a lover writes a letter to his beloved, that letter is holy. Zen brings holiness to ordinary life. A great Zen master, Hokkoji, used to say, how wondrous this, how mysterious. I carry fuel, I draw water. How wondrous this, how mysterious. Carrying fuel, drawing water from the well, and he says, how mysterious. This is the Zen spirit. It transforms the ordinary into extraordinary. It transforms the profane into sacred. It drops the division between the world and the divine. That's why I say it is not a theology. It is pure religion. Theology contaminates religion. There is no difference between a Mohammedan and a Christian and a Hindu as far as religion is concerned. But there is great difference as far as theology is concerned. They have different theologies. People have been fighting because of theology. Religion is one. Theologies are many. Theology means the philosophy about God. The logic about God. It is all meaningless because there is no way to prove God. There is no way to disprove either. Argumentation is just irrelevant. Yes, one can experience, but one cannot prove. And that's what theology goes on doing. And theology goes on doing such stupid things. Logic chopping. And when you look at it from a distance, you will laugh. It is so ridiculous. In the Middle Ages, Christian theologians were very much concerned, very much troubled, puzzled about problems which will not look problems to you. For example, how many angels can stand on the point of a needle? Now books have been written about it. Great argumentation. Mullah Nasruddin, the owner of two lovebirds, sent for a veterinarian. "I am worried about my birds," he announced. "They have not gone potty all week." The doctor looked inside the cage and asked, "Do you always line this thing with maps of the earth?" "No," answered Mullah Nasruddin. "I put that in last Saturday when I was out of newspapers." "That explains it," replied the vet. "Love birds are very sensitive creatures. They are holding back because they figure this planet Earth has taken all the crap it can stand." Theology is crap. And because of theology, religion becomes poisoned. A really religious person has no theology. Yes, he has God. He has the experience. He has the truth. He has that luminosity. But no theology. But theology has been of great help to scholars, pundits, the so-called learned people. It has been of great interest to the priests, to the popes, to the Shankaracharyas. It has been of great benefit to them. Their whole business depends on it. Zen cuts the very roots. It destroys the very business of the priest. And that is one of the ugliest business in the world. Because it depends on a very great deception. The priest has not known and he goes on preaching. The theologian has not known, but he goes on spinning theories. He is as much ignorant as anybody else, maybe even more so. But his ignorance has become very, very articulate. His ignorance is very much decorated with scriptures, decorated with theories, decorated such cunningly and cleverly that it is very difficult to detect the flaw. Theology has not been of any help to humanity, but certainly it has helped many people. The priests, they have been able to exploit humanity in the name of foolish theories. Two psychiatrists meeting in a busy restaurant got to talking, and one said he was treating a rather interesting case of schizophrenia. At that the other analyst barked, "What is so interesting about that? Split personality cases are rather common, I would say." "This case is interesting," responded his colleague. "They both pay." That's how theologians have lived. Theology is politics. It divides people. And if you can divide people, you can rule them. Zen looks at humanity with undivided vision. It does not divide. It has a total look. That's why I say Zen is the religion of the future. Humanity is growing slowly towards that awareness where theology will be dropped and religion will be accepted pure as an experience. In Japanese, they have a special word for it. They call it konomama or sonomama. Thisness of existence. This, capital this, is it. This isness of life is God. Not that God is, but the very isness is divine. The isness of a tree, the isness of a rock, the isness of a man, the isness of a woman, the isness of a child. And that isness is an undefined phenomenon, an indefinable. You can dissolve into it. You can merge into it. You can taste it. How wondrous, how mysterious. But you cannot define it. You cannot pinpoint it logically. You cannot formulate it into clear-cut concepts. Concepts kill it. Then it is no more the isness. Then it is a mind construct. The word God is not God. The concept God is not God. Neither is the concept love, love. Nor is the word food, food. Zen says a very simple thing. It says, remember that the menu is not the food. And don't start eating the menu. That's what people have been doing down the centuries, eating the menu. And of course, if they are undernourished, it is natural. If they are not flowing, if they are not vital, if they are not living totally, it's natural. It is predictable. They have lived not on real food. They have been talking too much about food. And they have forgotten completely what food is. God has to be eaten. And God has to be tasted. And God has to be lived, not argued about. The process of about is theology. And that about goes round and round. It never comes to the real thing. It is a vicious circle. Logic is a vicious circle. And Zen makes every effort to bring you out of that vicious circle. How logic is a vicious circle? Because the premise is already having the conclusion in it. The conclusion is not going to be something new. It is contained in the premise. And then, in the conclusion, the premise is contained. It is like a seed. The tree is contained in the seed. And then the tree will give birth to many more seeds, and in those seeds trees will be contained. It is a vicious circle. Seed, tree, seed. It goes on. Or egg, hen, egg, hen, egg. It goes on ad infinitum. It is a circle. To break out of this circle is what Zen is all about. Not to go on moving in your mind through words and concepts, but to drop into existence itself. A great Zen master, Nan-in, was cutting a tree in the forest, and a professor of a university has come to see him. Naturally, the professor thought this woodcutter must be knowing where Nan-in lives in the hills, so he inquires. And the woodcutter took his axe in his hands and said, "I had to pay for it very much." And the professor has not inquired about his axe. He is inquiring where Nan-in lives. He is inquiring, will he be in the temple if I go? And Nan-in raises the axe and says, "Look, I had to pay very much for it." The professor feels a little puzzled. And before he can escape, Nan-in comes even more closer. His axe just on the head of the professor, and the professor starts trembling. And Nan-in says, "It is real sharp." And the professor escapes. Later on, when reached the temple, he came to know that the woodcutter is nobody but Nan-in himself. Then he inquired, "Is he mad?" "No," the disciple said, "because you had asked, is Nan-in in?" And he was saying, "Yes." He was showing his inness and isness. That moment, he was a woodcutter. That moment, axe in his hands, he was totally absorbed in the sharpness of the axe. He was that sharpness in that moment. He was saying, "I am in," by being so immediate, by being so totally in the present. You missed the point. He was showing you the quality of Zen. Zen is non-conceptual, non-intellectual. It is the only religion in the world which preaches immediacy. Moment-to-moment immediacy. To be present in the moment. No past, no future. But people have lived with theologies. And those theologies keep them childish. They don't allow them to grow. You cannot grow confined in a theology by being a Christian or a Hindu or a Mohammedan, or even a Buddhist. You cannot grow. You don't have a space enough to grow. You are confined very much in a very narrow space. You are imprisoned. A young priest took away $100,000 from the church safe and lost it on the stock market. Then his beautiful wife left him. In despair, he went down to the river and was just about to jump off the bridge when he was stopped by a woman in a black cloak with a wrinkled face and stringy grey hair. "Don't jump," she rasped. "I am a witch, and I will grant you 3 wishes if you do something for me. I am beyond help, he replied. Don't be silly, she said. Don't be silly, she said. Al-Kajham, the money is back in the church vault. Al-Kajham, your wife is home waiting for you with love in her heart. Al-Kajham, you have $200,000 in the bank. That's wonderful, stuttered the priest. What do I have to do for you now? Spend the night making love to me. The thought of his sleeping with the toothless old hag was repellent, but certainly worth it. So they retired to a nearby motel. In the morning, the distasteful ordeal over, the priest was dressing to go home when the bat in the bed said, "Say, Sami, how old are you?" "I am 42," he replied. "Why? Aren't you a little old to believe in witches?" That's what happens. If you believe in God, you can believe in a witch. That is the same package. If you can believe in one kind of nonsense, you can believe of all kind of nonsenses. But you never grow. You remain juvenile. Zen means maturity. Zen means drop all wishes and see what is the case. Don't bring your dreams into reality. Clean your eyes completely of dreams so that you can see what is the case. That isness is called Konu Mama or Sonu Mama. Konu or Sonu Mama means the isness of a thing. Reality in its isness. All ideologies prevent you to see. Ideologies are all blindfolds. They obstruct your vision. A Christian cannot see, neither can a Hindu, nor a Mohammedan. Because you are so full of your ideas, you go on seeing what you want to see. You go on seeing what is not there. You go on projecting. You go on interpreting. You go on creating a private reality of your own, which is not there. This creates a sort of insanity. Your so-called saints, out of 199, are insane people. Zen brings sanity to the world, utter sanity. It drops all ideologies. It says, be empty. Look without any idea. Look into the nature of things, but with no idea, with no prejudice, with no presupposition. Don't be preoccupied. That is one of the fundamentals. So theology has to be dropped, otherwise you remain preoccupied. Can you see the point? When you have a certain idea, there is every possibility you will find it in reality. Because mind is very, very creative. Of course, that creation will be only in imagination. If you are seeking for Christ, you may start having visions of Christ. And they will be all imaginary. If you are seeking Krishna, you will start seeing Krishna, and they will be all imaginary. Zen is very down to earth. It says imagination has to be dropped. Imagination comes out of your past. From the childhood you have been conditioned for certain ideas. From the childhood you have been taken to the church, to the temple, to the mosque. You have been taken to the scholar, to the pundit, to the priest. You have been forced to listen to sermons. All kinds of things have been thrown into your mind. Burdened with all that, don't come to reality. Otherwise you will never come to know what reality is. Unburden. That unburdening is Zen. A minister of the gospel was conducting religious services in an asylum for the insane. His discourse was suddenly interrupted by one of the inmates crying out wildly, "I say, have we got to listen to this Tommy rot?" The minister, surprised and confused, turned to the keeper and said, "Shall I stop speaking?" The keeper replied, "No, no, keep right on. That won't happen again, not at least for 7 years, because that man has only one sane moment every 7 years." It is really very difficult to be sane in an insane world. So Zen is simple and yet difficult. Simple as far as Zen is concerned. It is the most simple thing, the simplest, because it is a spontaneous thing, but very difficult because of our conditioned minds, because of the insane world in which we live, by which we have been brought up, by which we have been corrupted. The second thing, Zen is not a philosophy. It is poetry. It does not propose. It simply persuades. It does not argue. It simply sings its own song. It is aesthetic to the very core. It is not ascetic. It does not believe in being arrogant, aggressive towards reality. It believes in love. It believes that if we participate with reality, reality reveals its secrets to us. It creates a participatory consciousness. It is poetry. It is pure poetry, just as it is pure religion. Zen is very, very concerned with beauty. Less concerned with truth, more concerned with beauty. Why? Because truth is a dry symbol. It is not only dry in itself, people who become too much concerned with truth, they become dry also. They start dying. Their hearts shrink. Their juices no more flow. They become loveless. They become violent. And they start moving more and more in the head. And Zen is not a head thing. It is a total thing. Not that the head is denied, but it has to be given its right place It is not given any dominant status. It has to function with the totality. The guts are as important as the head, and the feet are as important as the head, and the heart is as important as the head. And the total should function as an organism. Nobody should be dominant. Philosophy is head-oriented. Poetry is more total. Poetry has more flow to it. Poetry is more concerned about beauty. And beauty is non-violence. And beauty is love. And beauty is compassion. The Zen seeker looks into reality to find out the beautiful. In the songs of the birds, in the trees, in the dance of a peacock, in the clouds, in the lightning, in the sea, in the sands, it tries to look for the beautiful. Naturally, to look for the beautiful has a totally different impact. When you are searching for truth, you are more male. When you are searching for beauty, you are more female. When you are searching for truth, you are to be more concerned with reason. When you are searching for beauty, you have to be more and more in tune with intuition. Zen is feminine. Poetry is feminine. Philosophy is very male, very aggressive. It is male mind. Zen is passive. That's why in Zen, sitting became one of the most important meditations. Just sitting, Zazen. Zen people say if you simply sit doing nothing, things will happen. They will happen on their own. You need not go after them. You need not seek them. You need not search for them. They will come. You simply sit. If you can sit silently, if you can fall into a tremendous restfulness, if you can unlax yourself, if you can drop all tensions, and you become a silent pool of energy, going nowhere, searching nothing, God starts pouring into you. From everywhere God rushes towards you. Just sitting, doing nothing, the spring comes and the grass grows by itself. And remember, when Jain says just sitting, it means just sitting, nothing else. Not even a mantra. If you are repeating a mantra, you are not just sitting. You are again getting into some tawny rot. Again some mind thing. If you are not doing anything whatsoever, if thoughts are coming, coming. If they are going, going. If they come good, if they don't come good. You are not concerned what is happening. You are simply sitting there. If you feel tired, you lie down. If you feel your legs getting tense, you spread them. You remain natural. Not even watching. Not making any effort of any kind. That's what they mean by just sitting. And just sitting, it happens. Zen is the feminine approach. And religion is basically feminine. Science is male. Philosophy is male. Religion is female. All that is beautiful in the world, poetry, painting, dance, they have all come from the feminine mind. They may not have come from women, because women have not been free to create yet. Their days are coming. When sin will become more and more significant in the world, the feminine mind will have a great upsurge, a great explosion. Things move in a togetherness. The past has been male-dominated, hence Islam and Christianity and Hinduism. The future is going to be more feminine, more soft, more passive, more relaxed, more aesthetic, more poetic. In that poetic atmosphere, Zen will become the most significant thing in the world. Philosophy is logic. Poetry is love. Philosophy dissects, analyzes. Poetry synthesizes, puts things together. Philosophy is basically destructive. Poetry is life-giving. Analysis is the method of philosophy. So it is the method of science. So it is the method of psychoanalysis. Sooner or later, psychoanalysis will have to be replaced by a more profounder psychosynthesis. Asaguli is far more right than Sigmund Freud. Because synthesis is closer to truth. The world is one. It is a unity. Nothing is separate. Everything pulsates together. We are joined with each other, interlinked. Whole life is a net. Even the small leaf around this Chantazu auditorium is joined with the farthest star. If something happens to this leaf, something is going to happen to that farthest star too. Everything is together. This togetherness, existence is a family. Zen says, don't dissect, don't analyze. A farmer who was witness in a railroad case in Vermont was asked to tell in his own way how the accident happened. Well, Jack and me was walking down the track and I heard a whistle. And I got off the track and the train went by. And I got back on the track and I did not see Jack. But I walked along and pretty soon I seen Jack's head. And I walked on and seen one of Jack's legs. And then I seen one of Jack's arms. And then another legs. And then over on one side Jack's head. And I says, by cracky, something must have happened to Jack. That's what has happened to humanity. Something has happened. Man has been cut into parts. There are now specialists. Somebody takes care of the eyes and somebody takes care of the heart and somebody takes care of the head and somebody takes care of something else, man is divided. Zen says man is a total organism. In modern science, a new concept is getting very much prevalent. They call it androgyny. Buckminster Fuller has defined androgyny as the characteristic of a whole system, an organism. An organism has something which is not just the sum total of its parts. It is called synergetic. That is, more than the simple sum of its parts. But when these parts are united in a functioning whole, in a working order, a synergetic dividend appears. The tick. You can open a clock and you put everything separate. The tick disappears. You put the parts together again in a functioning order. The tick appears again. The tick is something very new. No single part can be made responsible for it. No single part had it. It is the whole that ticks. And that tick is the soul. You take my hand away, you take my leg away, you take my head away, and the tick disappears. And the tick is the very soul. But the tick remains only in an organic unity. God is the tick of this whole existence. You cannot find God by dissecting. God can be found only in a poetic vision of unity. God is a synergetic experience. Science can never reveal it. Philosophy can never come to it. Only a poetic approach, a very passive, a very loving approach, when you fall enwrapped with existence, when you are no more separate as a seeker, when you are no more separate as a watcher, when you are no more separate as an observer, when you are lost into it, utterly lost, it is there, the tick. Third thing, Zen is not science but magic. But not the magic of the magicians. Magic as a way to look into life. Science is intellectual. It is an effort to destroy the mystery of life. It kills the wonder. It is against the miraculous. Zen is all for it, for the miraculous, for the mysterious. The life mystery has not to be solved, because it cannot be solved. It has to be lived. One has to move into it, cherish it. It is a great joy that life is a mystery. It has to be celebrated. Zen is magic. it gives you the key to open the miraculous. And the miraculous is in you, and the key is also in you. When you come to a Zen master, he simply helps you to be silent so that you can find your key which you are carrying all the way along, and you can find your door which is there, and you can enter into your own innermost shrine. And the last fundamental, Zen is not morality, it is aesthetics. It does not impose a code of morality. It does not give you any commandments, do this and don't do that. It simply makes you more sensitive towards the beautiful. And that very sensitivity becomes your morality. But then arises out of you, out of your consciousness. Zen does not give you any conscience as against consciousness. It simply gives you more consciousness, and your more consciousness becomes your conscience. Then it is not that the Moses gives you a commandment. It is not that it comes from Bible or Quran or Vedas. It is not coming from outside. It comes from your innermost core. And when it comes from there, it is not a slavery. It is freedom. When it comes from there, it is not that you are doing it as a duty reluctantly. You enjoy doing it. It becomes your love. These fundamentals, and now this profound sutra. Like the empty sky, it has no boundaries. Yet it is right in this place, ever profound and clear. Replace it by God, and you will immediately understand. But Zen people don't use the word God, they say it. Like the empty sky, it has no boundaries. Yet it is right in this place, ever profound and clear. If you start looking for the sky, you will never find it. If you start searching and you become very serious, you will never find the sky. Where you will find the sky? Because sky is not somewhere, it is everywhere. And that which is everywhere cannot be searched. You cannot locate it. You cannot say it is in the north. You cannot say it is in the south. You cannot say it is there. Because it is everywhere. That which is everywhere cannot be found somewhere. And where you will search, you will be rushing into the sky itself, here and there. And it is all sky. God is like the sky. Like the empty sky. It has no boundaries. So it cannot be defined. You cannot say where it begins and where it ends. It is eternal. It is infinite. Yet it is right in this place. Just in front of you. If you are relaxed, it is there. If you become tense, it disappears. A Zen master used to say, "It is clear, and so it is hard to see. A dunce once searched for a fire with a lighted lantern. Had he known what fire was, he could have cooked his rice much sooner." Now with a lighted lantern, you are searching for fire. And you are carrying all the time fire in your hands. Yes, the Zen master is right. Had he known what fire was, he could have cooked his rice much sooner. You can also cook your rice much sooner. And you are hungry. And you have been hungry for centuries, for eternity. And you have been searching for fire, and with a lighted lantern in your hands. People go on asking where God is. And He is just in front of you. He surrounds you. He is in and He is out, because only He is. But Zen people call it it. So that you don't get trapped into the word God. When you seek to know it, you cannot see it. Why? Because when you want to know it, your very wanting becomes a tense state of affairs. You become narrow. You become concentrated. When you seek to know it, you cannot see it. You miss. Because it can be seen only when you are utterly relaxed, when you are open from everywhere, when you are not concentrated. Listen to it. Ordinarily, people who don't know what meditation is write that meditation is concentration. There are thousands of books in which you will find this statement. This utterly stupid statement that meditation is concentration. Meditation is not concentration. It is the last thing that meditation can be. In fact, concentration is just the diametrically opposite. In concentration, you are very tense, focused, looking for something. Yes, concentration is good if you are looking for tiny things. If you are searching for an ant, concentration is perfectly good, but not good for God. God is so vast, so tremendously vast. If you look with concentration, you will find an ant, not God. For God, you have to be utterly open, unconcentrated. Open from every side. Not searching, not looking. A unfocused consciousness is what meditation is. Unfocused consciousness. Just you burn a small lamp. The light is unfocused. It falls in every direction. It is not going anywhere. It is simply there, falling in every direction. All directions are filled with it. Then there is a torch. Torch is like concentration. It is focused. When you want to look at God, a torch won't help. A lamp. If you are searching for an ant, perfectly good. If you are searching for a rat, perfectly good. The torch will do. For the small, focused consciousness is needed. In science, concentration is perfectly right. The science cannot exist without concentration. It is looking for the small and the smaller and the smaller. It goes on from the smaller to the smaller to the smallest. Molecule, and then it is looking for the atom, and then for the electron, and then for the neutron, and it goes on looking for the smaller. The whole search is for the smaller. So science becomes more and more concentrated and focused. Religion is just the opposite. Unfocused. Wide. Open to all directions, to all breezes possible. All doors, all windows open. Walls dropped. You are just an opening. When you seek to know it, you cannot see it. So the very effort to see it, the very desire to see it becomes a barrier. don't seek gods, don't seek truth. Rather, create the situation of unfocusedness and God comes to you. It comes to you. It is there. There is a very famous anecdote about one of the rarest women in the world, Rabia. A Sufi mystic was staying with Rabia. His name was Hassan. And he must have heard Jesus Christ's statement, "Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you will find it." So every day in his morning prayer, afternoon prayer, evening prayer, night prayer, 5 times Mohammedans do their prayers. 5 times every day he will say to God, "I am knocking, sir, and I am knocking so much. Why it has not opened up to now? I am beating my head against your door, sir. Open it." Rabia heard it one day. Rabia heard it the second day. Rabia heard it the third day. Then she said, "Hassan, when you will look, the door is open. You go on talking nonsense. I'm knocking. And the door is all the time open. You look. But you are too much concerned with your knocking and asking and desiring and seeking, and you cannot see. The door is open." And Rabia is far more truer than Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ's statement is on a lower plane. Yes, it is good for people who have not even started searching. It is good for the KG class, those who have not started searching yet. For them it has to be said, "Seek, search, knock." And for them, a guarantee has to be given, otherwise they will not seek. A guarantee that you knock and it shall be opened unto you. Ask and it shall be given unto you. Rabia's statement is pure Zen. She says, "Look, you fool, the door is open. And it has always been open. And just by your asking, and just by your shouting, you are closing your eyes. It is only a question of opening your eyes. The door has always been open. God has always been available. God is unconditionally available. When you seek to know it, you cannot see it. You cannot take hold of it. But you cannot lose it." See the beauty of this statement. You cannot take hold of it. If you want to possess God, you will not be able. God cannot be possessed. All that is great cannot be possessed. And that's one of the most foolish things man goes on doing. We want to possess. You fall in love and then you want to possess. And by possessing, you destroy love. Love is of the quality of God. Exactly, Jesus has said, love is God. If you really want to be in love, don't try to possess it. By possessing it, you kill it. You poison it. You are so small and love is so great, how can you possess it? You can be possessed by it. True, but you cannot possess it. The smaller cannot possess the bigger. So simple, but so difficult. When we love somebody, we want to possess the love, we want to possess the beloved, the lover. We want to become completely dominant because we are afraid somebody may take it away. But before anybody is taking it away, it is gone. It is not there anymore. The moment you start thinking of possessing, you have killed it. Now there is a dead thing, a corpse. The life has disappeared. Life cannot be possessed because life is God. Existence cannot be possessed because existence is God. You see a beautiful flower, a rose on a bush, and you immediately take it away from the bush. You want to possess it. You have killed it. Now you put it in your buttonhole. It is a dead flower. It is a corpse. It is no more beautiful. How a dead thing can be beautiful? It is just a memory and it is fading. It was so alive on the bush. It was so beautiful on the bush. It was so young and so happy, and there was dance in it and there was a song around it. You killed all. Now you are carrying a dead flower in your buttonhole. And this is what we are doing in everything. Whether it is beauty, love, God, we want to purchase. You cannot take hold of it, remember. But you cannot lose it. So beautiful. Yes, you cannot possess it, but there is no way either to lose it. It is there. It is always there. If you are just silent, you will start feeling it. You have to fall in tune with it. You have to become silent so you can listen it. You have to become silent so the dance of God can penetrate you. So God can vibrate you. So God can pulsate in you. You have to drop your rush, your hurry, your ideas to go somewhere, to reach, to become, to be this and that. You have to stop becoming, and it is there. You cannot lose it. In not being able to get it, you get it. In not being able to get it, you get it. The moment you understand, I cannot possess it, and you drop your possessiveness, it is there, and you have got it. The moment you understand love cannot be possessed, a great understanding has arisen in you. And now you will have it, and you will have it forever. You cannot exhaust it. But you will have it only when you have got the point that it cannot be purchased, that there is no way to get it. This is the Zen paradox. Zen is the path of paradox. It says if you want to possess God, please don't possess Him and you will possess Him. If you want to possess love, don't possess. And it is there, and it is always yours. You cannot lose it. It is not possible to lose it. When you are silent, it speaks. When you speak, it is silent. You both cannot speak. Martin Buber has made the word dialogue very, very prevalent in the Western world. A great insight, but not yet of that height as Zen. Martin Buber says prayer is a dialogue. In the dialogue, you speak to God. God speaks to you. A dialogue has to have two. Of course, a dialogue is a I-Thou relationship. It is a relationship. You relate. Zen says this is not possible. If you speak, God is silent. When you are speaking and creating noise in your head, He disappears because His voice is so still and so small. So silent. It can be heard only when you are utterly silent. It is not a dialogue. It is a passive listening. Either you speak, God is not there. or God speaks and you are not there. Dissolve. You disappear. Then you hear Him. Then He is speaking from everywhere, from every chirping of every bird, and from every murmur of every brook, and from every wind passing through every pine. Everywhere He is, but you fall silent. When you are silent, it speaks. When you speak, it is silent. The great gate is wide open to bestow alms, and no crowd is blocking the way. There is no competition. There is nobody blocking your way. There are no competitors. You need not be in a hurry. You need not make any effort to grab. There is nobody competing with you. And there is nobody standing in front of you. Only God. Only God. You can relax. You need not be afraid that you will miss it. You cannot miss it in the very nature of things. You cannot lose Him. You relax. All these statements are just to help you relax. God cannot be lost. Relax. There is nobody blocking the way. Relax. There is no hurry. Because God is not something in time. Relax. There is nowhere to go. Because God is not distant on some star. Relax. You cannot miss in the very nature of things. Relax. The whole message of all these paradoxical statements is relax. It can be condensed into one thing, relax. Don't seek. Don't search. Don't ask. Don't knock. Don't demand. Relax. If you relax, it comes. If you relax, it is there. If you relax, you start vibrating with it. That's what Zen calls Satori. Utter relaxation of your being. A state of your consciousness where there is no becoming left. When you are not anymore an achiever, when you are not going anywhere, when there is no goal, when all goals have disappeared and all purposes have been left behind, when you are, simply are, in that moment of isness, you dissolve into totality and a new tick arises. That has never been there. That tick is called Satori, Samadhi, enlightenment. It can happen in any situation, whenever you fall in tune with the whole. The last thing, Zen is non-serious. Zen has a tremendous sense of humor. No other religion has evolved so much to have that sense of humor. Zen has laughter in it. Zen is festive. Zen's spirit is that of celebration. Other religions are very serious, as if to achieve God is a great work, as if somebody is going to take God away from them, as if God is trying to hide, as if God is creating hurdles knowingly, deliberately, as if there is great competition. and God is not enough for all, as if God is money. Not enough for all. If you don't grab it immediately before others, others will grab. Very serious people, money-minded people, goal-oriented people. But not really religious. Because God is so big, so huge, so enormous. It is the totality of existence. Who can exhaust it? There is no need to be afraid that somebody will possess before you and then what you will do. You will be lost forever. There is no struggle. No competition. And there is eternal time available. Don't be in a hurry. And don't be serious. Long faces are not truly religious faces. They are simply saying they have not understood it. Otherwise they will have a good laughter. Laughter is very unique to Zen. And because of laughter I say it is the highest religion up to now. It does not make your life ugly. It does not make you crippled. It makes you dance. It makes you enjoy. A small boy was taken for the first time to see Madame Tussaud's world famous wax work show in London. He was plainly depressed by the whole thing. His mother sought to enlighten him. "You see, dear, all these men and women are famous people who lived a long time ago. They are all dead now." The lad's gloom deepened and he muttered, "So this is heaven?" That is the danger. If you go to a Christian heaven, you will be in something like that. Just think of the horrible nightmare of living with Christian saints. Somebody asked a Zen master why there are not so many saints on earth. He laughed and he said, "They are good in heaven because it is very difficult to live with them. We are fortunate that they are not on the earth. Let them be in heaven. It is good." Just imagine living with his saint. You would start thinking of committing suicide. Zen brings laughter and a new breeze into religion. Zen makes joke religious. It is a totally different kind of approach. More healthy. More natural. These are the fundamentals. I may have told you very fast. Listen to this story. Pop Gabardine, coach of Midwestern football team, had seen his charges trampled 8 Saturday afternoons in a row. The last time by a humiliating score of 52-0. When the squad regathered the following Monday, Pop said bitterly, "For the last game of the season, we might as well forget all the trick plays I tried to teach you, dimwits. We are going back to fundamentals. Let us go. Lesson number one, this object I am holding is known as a football. Lesson number two, at this point, Coach Gabardine was interrupted by a worried fullback in the front row who pleaded, "Hey, Pop, not so fast." I had gone very fast. But I hope here you people are not dimwits. I trust your intelligence. Enough for today.